Back here on Downtown 431, your Monday. Time for us to talk a little Boston sports and more. And to do that, we turn to Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Happy Monday to you there, Chad.
Happy Monday, Rich. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you. It's a beautiful day up here. Although I don't know if you're getting this in southern Maine. I feel like every day in April, the wind has been like 60 miles an hour.
Yes, it's pretty windy down here, but sunny and quasi-warm, which I will take for April.
Right. Yeah, no complaints, certainly. I will take anything that doesn't require a shovel at this point. Well, where to begin? So much going on in Boston sports. Let's start with the Celtics because, man, at least for one brief shining moment yesterday, they looked like a team that wanted to take care of business and not drag every one of these series out to seven games.
Yeah, just keep doing that. I mean, got a little tight there at the end. I mean, they were still up 13, and you knew the math wasn't going to work. But they kind of let the Heat whittle away what was a 32-point Celtics lead after three quarters. But they were up 32 after three quarters. And if you keep playing like you did, where Miami really had no answers, and they certainly don't have equal talent with Jimmy Butler out and Rozier out, and this should be pretty close to a cakewalk for the Celtics. I was hoping going into the series that it would go like the Nets series did 2 years ago, where they, you know, they won the first game. Tatum had that layup off the Smart pass to win it at the buzzer, and then they swept the Nets off the floor the rest of the series. I'd like to see that and see that Miami ghost exercise here as quick as possible, because Miami's going to play really physically. We saw that in the end. And I think it's imperative for the Celtics to get out of the series with as few bumps and bruises as possible.
Well, yeah, but as you wrote, game two will tell us for sure whether this team has perhaps learned from their past mistakes.
Yeah, I wrote that yesterday. I'm kind of the bridge guy here, like the 2010 Red Sox. Was that the bridge year team?
Yeah, I think so.
It was I'm sort of the guy writing the column that carries from one game to the next. So putting game one behind us and thinking about what's ahead in game two the next day. And I just want to see them come out and do the same thing. And I think they will. This team, for the frustrations that they had along the way in losing 18 games, just 18 games, it felt like everyone was magnified. They do have things to work through. We still don't know what they're going to look like late in games in a tight game, and how they'll execute. That's been an issue down the road. I think rebounding might cause them to lose a game or two along the way in the playoffs. But this is an excellent team, and the most important thing is for them to keep that consistency and focus every night. And that's what I want to see in game two. I want to see them come out like they did yesterday, and I think they will, but you can't really count on it until you see it happen. I think it will happen, but we need to see that with our own eyes.
But it's such a well-constructed team. We've talked about it before, but yeah. What Porzingis adds to this team, what the professionalism of somebody like Jrue Holiday adds to this team, I feel like those were the things that were missing the last couple of seasons.
They were. I mean, they can beat you more ways, which Miami's finding out. I mean, they just don't have an answer for Porzingis. They didn't in the regular season, whereas last year, Al Horford's a terrific player, but he's a different player, and it allowed Bam Adebayo to roam and to be a defensive menace, and he can't really do that anymore. Porzingis will just step out there and knock down threes. And he makes smart passing decisions, too. But the construction of this team, you know, as you mentioned, is pretty remarkable, because you got Jrue Holiday coming in, who was had a different role with the Bucks. The offense ran through him a lot, or he initiated the offense a lot. There were plays that were run for him. That really doesn't happen anymore. And he's come in here as the only guy of the championship and sacrificed and adjusted his role to where he's, all right, I'm going to be a corner three-point shooter. Well, I'll be the best one in the league. And it's been a pleasure to watch that. And the other element of it that really jumps out, I think guys on the bench, we don't talk about this a lot, but guys on the bench really have mastered the roles that they're asked to play. We don't think about Horford as a bench guy, but Sam Hauser, designated shooter, really has come a long way in that role. And he's fantastic. The second quarter yesterday, Pritchard comes in, changes the pace. Cornett, even the developmental success story down in down with the Maine Celtics, where you know, he's fit into his role. So it's not just this great starting five plus Al Horford that they have, but guys who can come in and do exactly what their coach asked them to do, which is all you want from a role player.
Talking with Chad Finn here on Downtown. Oh, when Belichick was in charge, I never knew, nor did anybody know, what he was going to do at the NFL draft. And I feel like I'm kind of in that same boat. No, I assume they'll take a quarterback this week, but will it be with number three, or will they trade down? What do you think?
Whatever Jonathan Kraft wants. I mean, people are annoyed at Robert Kraft right now. Wait until Jonathan runs the team for a while. But it's really interesting. I had a media friend texting me earlier saying, the leaks are coming from everywhere in Foxborough. This is ridiculous. And I was like, 25 years, we found out nothing. I'm kind of enjoying it. No matter what's true and what isn't. But I hope they take May 3rd. I'm very worried that the Commanders are going to take him second. My other alternative to that would be if they just get overwhelmed with an offer. There's only so much a team can offer in picks, but the Vikings, I think, would have really want May, and I want a lot from them. Not a Herschel Walker trade. That doesn't happen anymore, but a lot from them to move out of that three spot, because they have 11 and 23, and if you're picking 11 and 23, you're not getting one of the best guys at any position. You're not getting the top one, two, or three receivers. You're probably not getting one of the top three tackles. And if you take a quarterback there, it's one of the guys who's in that second tier. So I want to stay at three, take May, and be patient with him and build this roster around him. That's my ideal for the draft.
All right, hear me out on this. Don't think I'm crazy right away. Now, maybe it's because when the Red Sox season was ready to start, I went out because I'd cut the cable. I went out and invested $30 a month on the Nesson app. So maybe I'm just trying to justify my purchase. But I like this scrappy Red Sox team with a bunch of guys who don't even deserve to be in the majors, but largely playing hard.
Yeah, it's 13-10 records, pretty impressive for everything that they've endured. Now, Alex Cora hasn't been perfect this year. I think some of the defensive issues of this team reflect on him a little bit. But what they've done while essentially losing their entire infield, I know Devers isn't on the DL and will be back soon, but Story, Von Grissom hasn't played for the Red Sox at all, and now Cassis looks like he's going to be out for quite a while. To be able to hold it together just with dealing with that, let alone losing Giolito in spring training and Nick Pivetta for a while here, it's pretty remarkable. I don't know how sustainable it is. I mean, some of the lineups they've been running out there look like they should be the Worcester lineup at times, but the one thing I do take away from it is that this Craig Breslow, Andrew Brait, Bailey in particular, are going to be able to get stuff out of pitchers who maybe struggled to succeed elsewhere. And Bailey did this with the Giants. He's lived up to his billing as one of the best pitching coaches in baseball. And it's going to be fun to watch this team have some pitching finds, at least over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I like what I've seen from the young reliever Slayton. He's been solid so far.
Yeah,
and I like the way Willier Abreu has been playing. He looks like the real deal out there. We got glimpses of it last season, but now he's fun to watch, and I like the way he plays the game.
I do too. Yeah, he got off to a slow start, and I was kind of wondering if he might end up back in Pawtucket, and you know, that chance wouldn't come, but it has. And one of the really likable things about him is he has a great feel for the strike zone. A lot of young hitters, when they come up, they're free swingers. I think Rafaela is exhibit A of that. And one thing he's going to have to cure early in his career to be a productive offensive player. But Abreu has a veteran's approach already, and pretty good player. I think, I don't know if he's going to be like a cornerstone, but he reminds me like of skill set isn't the same, but kind of like a Troy O'Leary type, where they got They got Abreu in the Astros trade for Vasquez. O'Leary was one of Dan Duquette's waiver acquisitions. But, you know, good for some 20 home runs a season and a lot of RBIs. And, you know, Abreu's got a nice arm in the outfield, too. So it looks like a guy who could be here for a while.
Now, they get Devers back and O'Neill back tomorrow. But if Casas is out for a while, what do they do? Do they have to make a trade or at least maybe explore one of those still unsigned free agents?
I think you play Bobby Dahlbeck every day and see if he can get to 10 hits this season.
I feel so badly for him. Oh my gosh, the look on that man's face as he takes yet another called third strike. Oh my gosh, you could shoot his dog and he'd be happier.
I know. He's a really good guy, too. And we forget, you know, he's a frustrating hitter for sure because of all the strikeouts. But he hit 25 home runs a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
He just had some success in the major leagues, but just fell off a cliff. And yeah, I don't know. It's the easiest position in baseball probably to fill. They could go out and find kind of a replacement level player there, but losing Casas, that really hurts and kind of feels like a tipping point for, you know, this good start and these relatively feel good vibes. Reality could catch up to them with him out.
He had a really nice piece on Jack Edwards, the longtime play-by-play guy of the Bruins. He's had quite a run, 19 years there. But as you said, it would have been nice to see him be able to go out on his own terms.
Yeah, I just kind of have some empathy for the guy. And made the point that he's had a dream career. I mean, he's the first guy to tell you don't feel sorry for me. But he worked at... He won an Emmy at ESPN and was part of the Sports Center crew. And, they were in their heyday there. And that was a must watch every night. And just has done some remarkable things. But his dream job was always to be the Bruins play-by-play guy. And he got that and he loved it. And I know he drove some people crazy and he was a homer and all these things. But that job means a lot to him. It was a dream come true. And it's always it's always disappointing when you see somebody, even somebody who's had great success and a lot to be happy about in their life, have that go away for something out of their control. So I just kind of felt bad for the guy, but he'll be the first to say, you know, don't feel bad for me. I've had it pretty good.
Now, you mentioned Alex Faust as a possibility. I know fans have loved his work when he's filled in. Is that something that's likely to happen?
I think so. I mean, Nestlin looks for the cheap way on everything.
Mm.
They may have some competition for him. He's done Rangers games this year, too. I think on the radio he told me he's done some stuff for TNT. It's pretty high profile. I mean, he didn't lose his job with the Kings because he was bad at it. They consolidated their broadcast teams into two, and he was into one, and he was the less experienced of the two people they had there, so he got let go. But very well-liked guy, Northeastern grad, young guy, and so would love to have the Bruins gig. And I think if it came down to the Bruins or the Rangers, he'd probably choose here, but we'll see what the money looks like. They are opening it up. Jack actually texted me. I got to double-check these, but Jack texted me a couple of people he thinks might be in the running to replace him. So it won't just be Alex, but I think in the end, if they pay him enough, the job would be his.
And finally, man, who knew Bill Belichick could be so funny on the air?
The Mona Lisa Vito comment wasn't enough. I mean, he probably had other funny moments as a Pats coach, but they're not coming to me right now. But we knew he was good on TV. He won an Emmy for that NFL 100 thing. Mm. This is Rich Eisen and Collinsworth. And he's really good at that. He was hilarious on College Game Day when the Army came to Gillette Stadium this year. He did the Steelers-Seahawks Super Bowl. I can't remember what network it was, but he was up there with his Belustrator thing or whatever they called it at the time. And we have a lot of evidence he's good at television. And when he was on McAfee's show this week, he was even funnier than I've ever seen him before. I think he's carving out a niche that is going to play to his strengths with the Manning stuff. If he appears on McAfee, if he does something with NFL films here. But what's going to happen is Belichick's going to be, he's not going to leave people's minds, and he's going to do TV so well that all these GMs who didn't hire him are going to think, you know what, this seems like a great guy, and he's going to have coaching options next year because the TV stuff is going to keep him prominent in people's minds.
Chad Fitt of the Boston Globe with us. Chad, thank you as always. Appreciate it. We'll catch up with you again in a couple of weeks.
Good to talk to you, Rich, as always.
Thanks, Chad. It is about 14 minutes to go before the top of the hour.